Good morning and welcome to Storylines. I'm your host, Christine Cowley. Our guest today is Muskoka author Josh Laverty, who has just written a YA novel called The Modus. Josh, welcome to Storylines.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Josh, you were looking for novels that you felt conveyed a message for your children that you felt good about them reading. And you had been talking to bookstore managers who expressed that they were having some difficulty finding YA books that were both original and still expressed some family values. So your solution to this was to start writing your own books, and The Modus came out of that. So tell us a little bit about coming to that decision.
Yeah, okay. My family is a bit of a unique one. I think not necessarily one in a thousand, but we homeschool. And as a homeschool family, we're directly involved in the educational process of our children. A friend of ours described it kind of like being, well, you're going to be teaching your kids everything anyway. The homeschooling is being more intentional about it.
Mm-hmm.
So in line with that, you know, in the absence of a teacher to find literature and curriculum for our kids, we do make use of some curriculum support, but we started delving into what books do we want our kids to read. With that in mind, we didn't find a whole lot of books that appealed to what we wanted them to learn about.
Mm-hmm.
And as anything in a market, you have things that drive waves of popularity. And my wife actually works in a bookstore.
Mm-hmm.
And so making use of some of the people that we knew in that market, we started talking to them about, well, what sort of things do you have difficulty finding? What are the things that, you know, that coincide between what you're looking for and what we want our kids to have? And just yesterday, there was somebody in the store who literally said, you know what, I went to the local bookstore, all I found was this. I went to another bookstore, all I found was this. I went online, all I found was this. When I come here, all I find is this. What I'm looking for is something different.
Mm-hmm.
And the manager of the store, not my wife, actually said, well, then what you're looking for is this. And handed her this book and said,
right,
read the back, and just, if this appeals to you, this may be it.
And so, you know, there's lots of action. It's an adventure story. There's rooftop fist fights and crazy aerial battles. But it's all framed in what you call the appropriate context.
Yeah. So I don't want to pick on any living authors, but
mm-hmm.
looking at some of the books that I grew up reading,
uh-huh.
They all have a deliberate bent. You can't possibly spend as much time as, for example, for myself, to sit down and try and write a book and not come out with some sort of bent or intended purpose.
Mm-hmm.
There's a message you want the reader to leave with.
Mm-hmm.
And you know you've accomplished that when you hear the affirmation from somebody saying, hey, I really thought about this, then, okay, well, I know I've conveyed the message I was looking for. That's where this a great deal of the satisfaction as an author comes from.
That's your life philosophy on the page.
Absolutely. And there have been some books that have been very popular lately that I go through, and from my perspective, what I see is they really feed off of this very marketable, very appealing demand in children. You see this pattern of, here's a disenfranchised young person. He has something that's unique about him that gives him power. Therefore, until he goes on this journey where he learns to exert this power over the evil villain and execute vengeance as an execution of his own agency upon that person.
Right, right.
If people lived that way in our society, we'd have a major problem.
Yeah, and you've got a one-faceted villain who's got no redeeming qualities.
Absolutely. I'm really looking for stories that have redeemable villains. There's very few, but there's been a couple of really good ones out in theaters lately where you see this movie and it's like, wow, this is a major blockbuster hit, and yet, for some reason, it broke that mold.
Mm.
So it's not, I really saw a need for people to meet that sort of a template or meet that sort of a portrayal of a story where,
yeah,
villains are redeemable, where people in real life need to learn to forgive. And so if forgiveness isn't the only way to redeem a villain, but those are options that exist in life for people to learn, options that uphold the sanctity, or better word, I suppose, the appropriateness of authority executed responsibly. All of authority in modern pictures, you go and see the theaters today,
yeah,
how is it portrayed?
Yeah.
It's portrayed very subversively.
Yeah.
Like Rage Against the Machine. Everyone's an, yeah, underdog raging against this corrupt machine. Zootopia, modern example of a film where there is no example of a genuine authority figure who isn't grotesquely corrupt.
Right.
That concerns me,
yeah.
That this is what's being taught to our kids.
And in the modus, we have Jacob, who possesses an extraordinary power, mm-hmm. but he needs to learn how to harness that and to use it appropriately and to use it for its intended, I suppose, use.
Mm-hmm.
And you've set the novel in England in the early 1800s, which is the tail end of the industrial age, where an agricultural society has now moved toward the machine age.
Mm-hmm.
But it was also a time in history where we began to really see enlightenment and awareness of our duty as humans to look after other humans. So it was... Mm-hmm. It was the beginning of the abolition of slavery, certainly in England,
mm-hmm.
and workers' rights were becoming, foremost in people's minds, and there were protests beginning in that time. So it was a period of great transition in history, and this is why you chose to set the modus in this time and in a place called Richmond, which is tell us about Richmond. Tell us about the setting.
Okay, so Richmond is kind of by accident, but also by method. I had envisioned in my mind a place called Richmond in northern England, where we saw a mixture of two cultures. We saw this community that's on the fringe of the city. It's really there's a good deal of contrast in the book between living in the country versus living in the city, and what that experience would have been like for a young person in those times. So along his journey, Jacob meets people. He ends up in Greater London, and he meets some people that are so dramatically different in their life experience from what he's lived with, that there's a contrast made there. And I loved this setting, this time, because we have, as you mentioned, the period of itself is this time of transition, this time of tumultuous turmoil. I mean, when people think of the 1800s, they immediately go, oh, steam engines, Victoria, and all that stuff. What a lot of people don't know is that there's a pretty big gap between the Napoleonic age and this age of imperialist mm-hmm. England that seems to be a bit of a black hole. People don't think a lot of what's going on in that time, but that was really the time where a lot of the groundwork, as you said, was laid in human rights. And this tumultuous era just seemed to be such a perfect era for a young boy who's going through this tumultuous experience.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that I want to mention is the self-publishing aspect of this book. But before we talk about self-publishing, I want to talk about this really interesting thing you've done in terms of the marketing. You've hired an artist to do this really beautiful artwork. I've got some of it in front of me here. So we're going to, when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about what drew you to develop your marketing this way. And then, of course, we're going to talk about self-publishing and what that experience has been like for you. So we're going to take a break and hear from our sponsors for a couple of minutes. We'll be right back with author Josh Laverty talking about his YA novel, The Modus. Welcome back to Storylines. This is Christine Cowley. Today, we're delighted to have with us Josh Laverty, author of The Modus. Well, Josh, before the break, we were talking about the marketing aspect that you really made some great effort in, and that's because you self-publish this book. So tell me about the choice to self-publish.
The choice for me was... Publishing in general was a bit of a choice. My wife and I have a bit of a background where we had a pretty traumatic experience that I won't get into, but more or less, I had something go viral that wasn't intended to go viral.
Mm.
And how I handled that personally, my wife said, "Do you really want to put this out there?" And I learned a lot of things in that decision that made the decision to self-publish actually an easy one.
Mm.
And as I've talked with more authors and I've talked with other performers or artists, because that first and foremost, I view myself as an artist. Writing is a medium by which I can share the story I want to share that I couldn't do using other mediums I'm also trained in.
Right.
So moving into writing, talking to other people in those fields, what they said was, here's the deal. First off, you're Canadian. Your entire market is smaller than the city of New York. And knowing people who work in sales, they've told me, the entire market of Canada is actually smaller than the market of California.
Wow.
So for a Canadian artist to release things into a Canadian market, I'm being told, and my experience in other fields has told me, that you really have to be able to produce your own work. There is no publisher who is willing to say, hey, You're Canadian. You're unknown. Yeah, I'll bankroll a huge process knowing the margins that exist on books are so small already. It's just not a viable market. And so what they explained to me was basically you're releasing a product. You got to stop thinking of it as a book. You got to think of it as a product.
Exactly.
And the population has an interesting sort of programming to them. If you go and you buy a lot of products, you look for the brand. You are going to buy them directly from the person who makes them because of their brand.
Yes.
You buy a Ford from Ford. Simple example. Because you're expecting quality.
Mm-hmm.
And for that reason, people go out and they seek out authors based on their name.
Yes.
They don't think of the publisher who's attached to it.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of writers now who are self-published, but people don't know because they are associated with their name. So to me, the emphasis of entering into an agreement with a publisher, which at this point many publishers said, sure, but you're going to bankroll part of it, in which case that's another way of saying you're self-publishing.
Yes, that's right. With our name on it, yeah.
What is the most expedient, least expensive way for me to do that while accomplishing the same things? This is distributed through Ingram.
Yes.
It's distributed through Barnes & Noble. It's available on the largest publishing platform in the world, Amazon.com.
Yeah.
Like, it can be purchased in 120 countries. Did I need a publisher to get that? No. So what would a publisher offer me? It would offer me more control over the physical production of the book. And
less control.
Or less control?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
You have control when you're self-publishing because you choose your editor, you choose your proofreaders, you choose your designers.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not just talking about graphic designers. I'm talking about graphic designers who do type.
Yeah,
you know, you have to have your book designed.
For sure.
All of those choices you need to release to a publisher. These are not your choices anymore. So there's the benefit is you don't have to spend money when you have a publisher and you have their name and their machine, their distribution machine behind you. But as you've said, Josh, you could accomplish all of this if you set your mind to it on your own.
Absolutely. And that was what I really came to is what is it that a publisher is going to do that I can't actually do myself? Because for me, in a sense, time is cheap. I'm not somebody who has the whole 24-hour day filled. But what I can do is I can take the expertise I have from graphic design, layout, marketing, and I have backgrounds in videography.
Yeah, I want to talk about that, Josh, because I think your background in videography really, to me, it's what supports these beautiful graphics you've had created. So tell me about how that played into this.
Well, it's an interesting thing that I know I've met artists, for example, in the production of this book, I did basically I created a creative brief and I sent that to three different artists whose work appealed to me, and all of them responded with, "Wow, we usually don't receive a creative brief." So that in itself was helpful to know what that is, to be able to communicate with my artists, to be able to communicate and convey the vision I wanted. I had that background to know how to communicate with them. And it meant that if I'm able to do these pieces of physically producing the book, making it appealing, making it professional, what I need to find is reach. Because I don't necessarily have that market to sell it to.
Yes.
So if I'm going to sell the book, because we're making a product, we're selling the product, I need a captive audience. And for some people, a lot of people, for example, who are significant public figures, Kim Kardashian released a book of pictures of her Instagram. It's published. Therefore, we know being published isn't a stamp of approval of literary genius.
Yes.
No offense to Kim Kardashian, but I've seen the book.
Yeah.
It's not that appealing. It's a bunch of pictures. There's nothing even
written.
But
she has, as you say, a captive audience.
Already. Exactly. Yeah. You have an audience you can sell it to. And so publishing in itself, again, it's not a stamp of approval of quality. It's a stamp of this is a product that will sell.
Yes.
Knowing that my book doesn't really fit the stamp of what's selling today,
right?
From what I understand or my impression of the market, maybe it is. I don't know. I'd love to see it sell like crazy. But the thing is that I don't see the template out there.
Yes.
I would be a risk for a publisher, but I can do these things, get it produced, and then find an audience.
Right. Yeah, and which you've done. So, you know, Josh, you've also been smart in doing a few things that publishers sometimes do. But, for instance, you're doing a big giveaway coming up, which our listeners might want to know about.
Yeah. So I was challenged recently that as an artist, what is it that you're doing to stimulate giving this holiday season? So I decided that it doesn't take a whole lot from me, but it could reach a lot of people and potentially impact people through the story if I take what I've done and give it away. So from today until December 25th, we've set it up so that you can download the Kindle ebook for free.
Wonderful. And where do they go to do that?
I have a link on Facebook.
Okay.
Basically, if you go to Amazon.com or .ca or any of the Amazon retailers that sell The Modus by J.D. Laverty, you're going to find there's a Kindle ebook option to download it, and it's free.
And I'd like to send people to your website because they can see these gorgeous graphics there.
Yeah, yeah, okay. It's easy to find. It's joshlaverty.com, J-O-S-H-L-A-V-E-R-T-Y.
And it's The Modus.
The Modus.
Now, I don't want to do any spoilers here, but I happen to know that you are writing more books.
Yes. So one of the grand visions in putting this book together, and this is, you're going to end up with me putting the pressure on myself to do this now.
Yes.
There were a couple of things that came out of it. Again, homeschool family.
Yes.
I want to make myself available to people who are using the book in an educational context.
Okay.
So I'm working on putting a forum together that would allow schools or educators or homeschoolers as a group to be able to access me for their students.
Right.
I think there's a lot to be gained in being able to read something, guessing at the intention of the author, and then being able to ask what the intention was to decide, did it succeed or did it fail? I'm not perfect. There were things I failed at in this book.
And to examine character motivation and actually be able to say, yeah, you've got that spot on, or no, this is actually where the motivation was.
Totally. The other side of it is that there are three primary characters to this book. There was a promotional card that you could pick up at True North Games or anywhere any of the retailers that sold it. And those three characters each have different perspectives on this chain of events. So this first book lays out the perspective of the main character, who's a young boy.
Jacob.
He has a sister. There's another book that I'm working on that is going to give very different perspective. Whole conversations where you see a different perspective of the conversation where she remembers what was said very differently from how he remembers what was said.
Okay, let's not tell them anymore because we want them to rush out and buy the first book, The Modus.
Yeah.
And once they finish that, they're going to be hanging on the edge of their seats while you frantically finish the next book.
Yeah.
And we're going to put the pressure on you, Josh.
Oh, gee.
We love to do that.
There's a third one. That's planned too. So, as I said, there's three characters.
So you've been listening to Storylines this morning. Josh Laverty has been our guest. Josh, thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure.
We've been talking about Josh's YA novel, The Modus. Josh has released this as a self-published novel and will continue to make some strides. This is Christine Cowley. I'm here every Thursday morning at 10:05 a.m. talking to authors and book folks about books and the writing life. Please join us next week when we welcome Muskoka author Peter Jennings back to the mic to talk about his latest release, Why Being Happy Matters. It'll be a great discussion to send out the old year and bring in the new. Please join us then.